Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome back to Star Wars Minute. It's the daily podcast where we analyze, scrutinize, and celebrate the Star Wars movies 1 minute at a time. I'm Pete the Retailer from PeteTheRetailer.com.
I'm Alex Robinson from ComicBookAlex.com.
And I'm Keith Phipps from UpRocks.com and the Next Picture Show podcast.
Yeah, thanks for coming back, Keith. You're a returning all-star.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm happy to be back.
Today you're back for minute 78 of The Phantom Menace. 78 starts with Anakin running onto the ship and ends with Anakin being introduced to Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is a historic, momentous thing, but we'll get there.
Right.
I love the beginning of this, Anakin running onto the ship at the kind of at the end of last minute. Qui-Gon is busy in tangling with Darth Maul, so he tells Anakin, run, tell them to take off. And just picture for a second that, you're sitting in your car waiting for, your wife or whoever, and then all of a sudden an 8-year-old kid runs into the car and it's like, go, she said to go. I've never met this kid before, I have no idea what's going on, and all of a sudden this kid just runs onto the ship and says, we gotta leave.
Yeah, you think he would run on and tell Panaka or whoever. He said to take off, and Panaka would be like, why? Because he's fighting that guy, that Panaka would go out and like try to help him or something.
Right.
But he just follows the 8-year-old. Well, the 8-year-old said we should take off, so...
Yeah, don't they have a whole like security force or something in the ship? They have a bunch of pilots, at least.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, he is told to fly low, though, so there's clearly a plan in place.
Yeah, Obi-Wan takes over and says, fly low. So I guess Obi-Wan knows that this is something they've done in the past, that Obi-Wan's like, oh yeah, the old jump on the landing ramp routine.
It's also that, they rush into the, presumably somebody vouched for Anakin. Maybe it was, I guess, Padme's on the ship, so maybe.
Oh, that's
true. Must have been a weird, or Jar Jar, I guess. Jar Jar vouched for him.
He carries a lot of weight with the... Yeah.
This kid knows what he's doing.
And I guess somebody told somebody, and so they burst into the cockpit. And I love that they burst in, and Panaka is just like, Qui-Gon's in trouble. In my mind, this is the way it plays out. Panaka bursts in and says, Qui-Gon's in trouble. Rick Olier looks out the windshield and then looks up at Panaka as if to say, no, that's my line. I'm the exposition guy. You're the negative guy. I'm supposed to say Qui-Gon's in trouble, and you're supposed to, he's done for.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that. Rick Olier definitely gives him a look for a second.
I really like the shot of because it's something we haven't really seen in a Star Wars movie, which is people fighting with lightsabers from very far away. I like that they look out the cockpit window and you see them kind of in the distance with their lightsabers. I thought that was a really cool shot. I can't think of any. I think in Empire, I guess you see them on the gantry way, fighting from far away, but.
Yeah, it's kind of thing I kind of wish you'd see more often. I just watched a couple months ago, I watched Hou Hsiao-hsien's movie, The Assassin, which does a lot of interesting things where they stage fight scenes that you would normally see up close from far away. And it's probably too artful an approach for George Lucas to make or anyone to make in a big blockbuster, but it's neat that it's in there for a couple of seconds. This is interesting. I remember thinking this was a cool yet ultimately disappointing lightsaber duel, and watching it again, I had to go back and watch the minute before this to refresh my memory. It's less than a minute long, this fight.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's nothing.
Yeah, it feels like a moment when the movie could have stood to have a little bit more there.
Yeah, or I mean, it literally. Yeah, I think it starts at the very end of the last minute. And by the end of this minute, it's everybody's like, "Whoo, that was a crazy fight, huh?"
Yeah, it's probably only about like 30 seconds or something.
Yeah, and it could be. I would love to see this in a just, you know, one quiet long shot of you know, just like from really far away, have maybe like a bantha walking by or something, and just have like off in the distance you see, you know,
we have some lightsaber farmer watching them from far away.
Yeah, totally, a moisture farmer watching, and then with his treadwell droid could have tied it back in with binoculars. He's watching this go on, and then you just see like, you know, lightsaber battle, and the ship flies over and Qui-Gon jumps on.
Yeah, yesterday our guest John Kowalik was saying he really liked this lightsaber battle, but I actually don't, aside from its brevity, I find the blocking very hard to kind of, again, if it was a longer shot where you kind of saw them, where you could kind of see more of their body motion, but there's a lot of close-ups and a lot of just like editing trickery where it's just like lightsabers flashing and close-ups of people, and maybe they didn't want to have a big lightsaber battle because they wanted to make the ending like the proper lightsaber battle.
Yeah, it's very much an appetizer.
Yeah,
an amuse-bouche, if you
will. Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's just at most like a shrimp on a plate. Like, it's not even really like an appetizer.
Right. It's so, you know, one of those walking trays of hors d'oeuvres.
Exactly.
Hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah. And then you're like, "Where's that guy with the lightsaber battles? That was so delicious, but it was so it was nothing."
Well, they're too popular. That's why.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's kind of Darth Maul, though, right? I mean, a lot of build up and then not a lot of follow through.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. Darth Maul is the hors d'oeuvre of the Sith.
that was the working title of this movie, Hors d'oeuvres of the Sith. So then Qui-Gon force jumps up onto the landing platform of the ship, and they leave Darth Maul behind.
Have you talked much about this ship?
A little bit, but what do you got?
I was kind of thinking it's kind of the quintessential Phantom Menace ship, where it's very shiny and very CGI looking, and the inside is very clean and bright. It's almost like just putting it all out there how different everything's going to look in this trilogy than from the original trilogy.
Yeah, even the droid repair room, the room that the droid's hanging out into, you know, the warehouse part of it is pretty immaculate. They keep a clean ship on Naboo.
And I don't know if that's cool as a conscious decision to set it apart, or if it's just kind of is, but it's kind of jarringly different than anything we've seen in Star Wars before. That general look,
it's jarringly different.
It does. Right. It does. The inside of the ship does look very like next generation-y.
Yeah,
like in that kind of the way it's lit and the sort of kind of antiseptic or at least clean feel to it.
And I think it is. I'd like to think that it's conscious, because it's almost, you know, kind of
trying to demonstrate the difference between the royalty in the Republic days versus the...
Right. Everything had smoother, cleaner lines and was actually cleaner, I think, maybe in an earlier time.
Right.
So then by the time we get to Star Wars proper, you know, it's a period of civil war and everything looks more ragged because it's, you know, there's been...
Right.
There's been a battle raging.
Well, it's hard to say because we don't really see that many environments in the original trilogy.
Right.
Like Tatooine, of course, is going to be dumpy because it's in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And the Falcon is, of course, famously a piece of junk. And but we don't really see a lot of other planets to find out how they shape up in terms of their dilapidation.
We get a... so twofold here. Let's first, before I talk about... maybe I'll jump into the alternate reality here.
Okay. What if? Pete the Watcher is here to tell us what if Qui-Gon had lived.
He cannot meddle in the affairs of the Star Wars characters.
I'm just here to observe and report, like Mall Cop or whatever.
Paul Blart?
Yeah, that's the one. So Keith, I don't know if you're aware that in the original kind of outlines of this, in the original plotting of this, all the stuff that Qui-Gon does, Obi-Wan was originally doing that.
Right. And then there's not supposed to meet until later, right?
Yeah. Once they get to Coruscant, then he meets up with his master, who's Qui-Gon. But So this this duel, this lightsaber duel, was originally Obi-Wan and Darth Maul. First, when he remember we discussed yesterday, I think that there was that probe droid, and Obi-Wan cuts it in half with his lightsaber, and then identifies it as a Sith probe specifically. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is a Sith probe, but I thought they were all extinct, which is an interesting, like, I don't know, like, oh, these people, it's like if you know suddenly you were attacked by something and you disabled it, and you're like, oh, like, that's funny, this is a Mayan drone,
this is an ancient Aztec dart.
Yeah, but you were like, oh, I thought they were all extinct. It's a weird combination to be able to identify something as Sith just because by its technology, but also something that's been extinct theoretically for years. But then also the battle itself, they exhibit much more Jedi powers, much more in the way of Jedi powers than Qui-Gon and Maul do in the final film. There's Obi-Wan and Darth Maul are shown, they levitate objects and they throw them at each other. They move extremely fast, so there's the return of that fast run that we only saw once. And even vibrating to the point of becoming almost invisible.
Wow.
Mm.
Yeah.
How would that have looked?
I have no idea. That seems
I'm just imagining Ewan McGregor just shaking his body really like slowly, like just like spazzing out and like, where'd he go?
You can't see me. I'm invisible.
Right. He's like Ed Begley Jr. in Amazon Women on the Moon.
Yeah.
He's just like naked and he thinks he's invisible, but he's not really. And so it's just, you know, Ewan McGregor running around naked being like, oh, you can't see me. And everybody's humoring him.
Yeah. I wish they had included that.
It would be not the first time he was naked in a movie.
Right. Yeah. He does it all the time. So I don't know why he wouldn't do it in this.
Does he get naked in a lot of movies?
He did in the 90s, like Velvet Goldmine and The Pillow Book, the Peter Greenaway movie. There was a time when at least a 50% chance you'd see Ewan McGregor's penis if you went to see one of his movies.
It would be funny, a list of actors who you see, like Harry Keitel had that reputation for a while, right? Wasn't he nude a lot in movies?
At least once, I know.
Yeah.
It was the 90s. It was a different time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You saw a lot more penises back then.
It was the Clinton administration. Everyone was
right.
It was what we did back then.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So Qui jumps on the ship, and then there's a little bit of... first of all, does the Queen's ship have guns on it? That they don't want to just double back around and try to kill Darth Maul with guns from the ship? Or better yet, like, okay, let's land the ship, and now that we're prepared, we can all go fight him instead of just me fighting him. Should they have finished off Darth Maul at that time, or do you think they were right in leaving him behind? And just saying, let's get back to...
I didn't see any guns on it, though. It would kind of make sense that it would be just a diplomatic ship, right?
Yeah.
In a sense, although...
Ships have guns?
If it's the Queen's transport, you'd think that it would be... armed. Well, no, I guess it always flies with an escort. Like, does Air Force One have guns? I don't think so, right? It's just a jumbo jet.
Yeah. Well, that is super cool to imagine.
Right.
Like a turret on top of the guy. Like a V-19 or something.
So I guess, it just always flies with an escort, so maybe it doesn't have guns.
Hmm.
So those the N1 starfighters that are in the hangar with it, those are always meant to fly with it.
Yeah, we didn't see them trying to blast their way past the blockade.
Right.
So then Obi-Wan asks Qui-Gon, what was it? And Qui-Gon also refers to Darth Maul as an it.
Right.
Which I find interesting.
That is strange. That struck me too.
Well, he doesn't want to use gender specific pronouns. He should have, you can't be sure how he wants to refer to himself. So in the meantime, maybe.
So they just can refer to the person as it. I'm sure Darth Maul appreciates their sensitivity.
It's just the polite thing to do.
Right.
Yeah. Or are they reacting more just because of the way it looked, or
maybe they thought he was some kind of mutant cactus or something.
Right. I guess we still don't know if Darth Maul was a man or so. I guess we should go with it until we know otherwise.
So. Doesn't he say that when he says introduces him? Doesn't he say this is my apprentice Darth Maul? He something something.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know. I'm thumbing through the scripts now to see if we have gender confirmation.
And Qui-Gon is also very winded, which is funny considering that the battle only lasted 30 seconds. Is this just because they're so out of practice from actually fighting people with lightsabers that Qui-Gon's like, oh boy, I'm a little out of practice.
Yeah.
I found that staging kind of unfortunate where he kind of collapses on his back and then his lightsaber retracts. And he has this sort of spent look on his face. I thought it was, maybe I just looked at the scene a little too closely, but it just seemed a little too intimate for me.
Well, that's the beauty of doing things 1 minute at a time. You look at everything with too much scrutiny. And he left.
This is my apprentice, Darth Maul. He will find your ship.
So he is the he. So the Jedi are just not good at differentiating.
Right.
He's wearing robes and stuff, so it's hard
to say. Hard to tell. But like I was saying, I think they just didn't want to be rude, so they went with it, which is presumably less rude in the...
How rude. And then...
we get the momentous introduction of Anakin Skywalker meet Obi-Wan Kenobi, which should be momentous.
It feels very there must be a term for this, but like in time travel, whenever there's a movie about time travel and they're like, it's kind of like, Stan Laurel, meet Oliver Hardy, you know, like, oh, that's how they became, you know, it has that feeling of very like, is there a term for that?
I don't know.
Heavy-handed or like?
It's kind of heavy-handed, but
yeah.
I know what you're talking about. I don't know if we should coin a term for it.
We should. What are we going to call it?
I don't know.
See, like on the show Boardwalk Empire, they did a lot of that kind of stuff. You know, that FDR, he'll never become president. You know, that kind of a thing.
Right, right.
Meet my sidekick, Alfred Capone. Yeah, I mean, there's an easy, this doesn't quite work as that, but sort of the easy historical irony of like in Titanic where this Picasso will never amount to anything.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, we know better, you know. But this should be... I don't know, it should be kind of the opposite of that, where it should be sort of like this chill-inducing moment where sort of history is being made before our eyes, and it's not. It's very casual.
Well, I find it weird because I'm never quite sure whether George Lucas is intending the prequels to be legitimately prequels, where you're supposed to watch these and not know that Anakin winds up killing Obi-Wan. Or whether this is all supposed to be basically flashback,
mm-hmm.
and then, like you said, it should be like more of an ominous feel to it, or some kind of like, you know. But it does. They generally don't lean that way. They don't like do much too much foreshadowing in that regard, where they're like, you know, like giving some kind of indication that someday this will all be echoed in the future.
Yeah, I have this weird thing where, and I know we're supposed to try to stay positive with the Phantom Menace, or have you given up on that at this point?
It's been tough to keep up. any help you can provide.
Well, the thing with this movie is like it'll reward me for watching it, and then remind me why I don't like it, all within like 30 seconds. Like right here, like, you know, the minute up to this, like, Darth Maul looks so cool. He's on his ship and everything. And then, you know, nothing happens. And then you get this sort of, leaden meet Obi-Wan Kenobi moment. But I mean, my biggest problem with the prequels, I guess maybe not biggest, but a problem I have with the prequels is I never see Anakin Skywalker as young Darth Vader. In my mind, they're just two discrete characters, because there's no way this kind of twerpy kid grows up to be the menacing villain of the original trilogy. It just, like, it never really, you know, obviously story-wise it makes that connection, but I never connect those two on any other level other than, yes, I know he grows up to be Darth Vader. It never feels like an emotional journey, or like it never feels like that circle's ever really completed for me. And I think this moment kind of illustrates that too. This is not, I have to remind myself, oh yeah, he kills him. That's right. Because it's the same guy.
Yeah, I mean, George Lucas has said, like, he wanted to show that Anakin was not evil. Like, he didn't want it to be like The Omen, where, like, there was this kid who you're like, oh, you know from the start that he's a bad seed. He wanted him to be a legitimately kind of innocent kid. But I guess the problem is then when you get to the next movie, he should at least be showing some indication of being, I guess he does show indications of being a jerk, but not like Darth Vader jerk.
Right.
Yeah.
More like Kylo Ren jerk than Darth Vader jerk. But,
yeah, it's a weird, I feel the same way, that I don't, you know, I don't link the two. And maybe it's, you know, partially, as we've said, I've only seen Revenge of the Sith the once, pretty much. So I don't, you know, not having that scene kind of, you know, committed to memory where he actually becomes Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, there should be more of a lead up to that I should have memory, you know, I should be able to think of scenes of Anakin doing stuff that's like, oh yeah, that's very Darth Vader-y kind of thing.
Well, I guess other than one or two shots, there's very little of Anakin as Darth Vader in the armor and, you know, doing stuff.
Right.
So maybe in between episode 3 and episode 4, there was more of a transition where Anakin's like, I gotta stop being such a whiner. I gotta be like, you know, took like a leadership course or something at the Empire Empire
be
Academy.
More assertive.
Yeah, exactly.
He does physical therapy to get used to his new robotic elements and all that. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been cool if it's, I know there's a little, we've been throwing out a lot of, you know, kind of what ifs to make this cooler. Make this a better series, if not, you know, just specifically a better movie. But if you had started with him, you know, as was originally intended, if he was 12 here, then maybe have something happen in the next movie where have kind of more of an intermediate step where it's not just his arm, you know, have him kind of have maybe, you know, the kind of the bottom, you know, kind of a preliminary version of the bottom of the breathing mask apparatus, or you know, maybe a little control panel on his chest or something, you know, something halfway or not quite halfway Darth Vader, but a little bit on the path to Darth Vader, so you can kind of get the, you know, the feel of it.
I think the Clone Wars cartoons do a better job of it, and not surprisingly, because they had, you know, 150 episodes to work with, as opposed to, you know, 6 hours of screen time with Anakin. So well, when they reboot it, well, I guess they already did reboot it, so it's kind of a it's kind of a moot point.
If you like a good murder mystery story, you'll love June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game where Detective June Parker unravels the mystery of her sister's death. Travel back to the beautifully illustrated 20s, find clues, discover hidden objects, and watch the story unfold with new chapters released weekly. Put your detective skills to the test. Download June's Journey on Android or iOS, or play online via Facebook games. What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Keith, do you remember seeing Phantom Menace for the first time and your impressions of it?
Yeah, I did. And I saw it at a critic screening in Chicago. I drove down from Madison, Wisconsin about a week before it came out. I remember like trying not to tell too many people because I didn't want to have to, because I didn't want to talk to everybody about this movie. Before. I just didn't want to give my opinion on it. And I was one of those people who kind of talked themselves into liking it more than they should have. And I know I'm one thing that's been therapeutic about this round of the show is that I realize I'm not alone in that. But you know, the second viewing, I kind of felt like maybe this movie wasn't entirely there. It's still my favorite of the prequels though. And in part because, it's the one that kind of feels the most I kind of like seeing all this stuff, this world new for the first time, and like the new look and all this, it felt fresher then, and it also just kind of ties into you know, a very pleasant summer for me personally, so it was it has pleasant associations. Yeah, the next time I saw it was about a week later with my girlfriend, then my wife now, she kind of left it, I think, seeing it with clearer eyes than I did the first time.
Yeah, it takes that sometimes. First time that I saw it, I was completely like, yeah, that was great. Yeah, that was great. And then went and saw it with a friend who, when it was done, was like, you know, expecting a lot and didn't pay off. And just that look of sadness on his face. I was like, wait, am I wrong? I might be wrong. And I've never fully hated this movie with the passion that some people do. It's my favorite of the prequels. And I still find it charming, but I as time went on, I understood more of like, oh, okay, yeah, that I can see how you might have serious problems with this. Doesn't hamper my enjoyment of it necessarily, but I see that there are definitely
right.
Yeah. Issues, problems.
So yeah, so many problems. Yeah.
So was that, did you just see it the two time? What's your Phantom Menace number? Is it
You know, nothing too outrageous. I saw it those two times in the theater. Right. I know I've watched it, maybe only watched it all the way through one more time. I think it's in my future though, because my daughter is 4 and I showed her the original trilogy and I took her to see The Force Awakens and she liked all those movies and she just out of nowhere said, are there other Star Wars movies? And I'm like,
the question every parent dreads hearing.
Yeah.
I do wonder if the future of the prequels is to be almost more of a footnote, because it's the it seems like the movies are making now are so much more of a piece with the original trilogy that these are going to look kind of at odds with everything else. But on the other hand, I also wonder if the generation, because you and I are on the same age, you guys and I are on the same age, I wonder if the generation that grew up with these is going to champion their values a little more. And we saw a little bit of that, I think, leading up to the release of The Force Awakens. I saw more than a few, the prequels are actually okay kind of pieces. I don't know, it's a tough, I think it's still a tough argument to make though.
It wouldn't surprise me if well, my feeling is that as time goes on, like, there's going to be less differentiation between the original trilogy, the classic, you know, the prequel trilogy, because it'll just be like James Bond movies where it's just like an endless stream of them. And, you know, mm-hmm. I guess those are easy to characterize by actor. But I do think, you know, like kids who are seeing them now don't see it as, they just see the prequels as other Star Wars movies, you know, for better or for worse.
So right.
I do feel like there's going to be a backlash or a front lash against the original trilogy, the younger generation championing the prequels.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could happen.
Well, yeah, then I'm sure by that point, then they'll make new movies that kind of address things from the prequels to kind of appease those people.
I think they will do sequels that are somehow like tying back to those movies to placate the prequel fans.
Right.
Yeah, but so far, most of the supplementary stuff, like the comics and I haven't read any of the new novels or anything, but it seems like they've kind of left that period largely alone.
Yeah, for now. But it'll come, you know, it's like with Generation X nostalgia, and then that's slowly giving way to you know, 90s nostalgia.
I think it's right now they're targeting us and, you know, our kids or whatever, you know, knowing that we're going to be the ones who are either digesting this or, you know, buying stuff for people who are digesting it. Whereas when the kids who were kids in the 90s are more the kind of the focus in a couple of years, then it'll be, you know, they'll start addressing them more. I'm glad they're not glossing over. In a way, I'm glad they didn't kind of completely excise these, because there was a rumor that they were going to just kind of, okay, you know, only the original trilogy counts.
Yeah, they were going to say they were not canonical. They were gonna
cut the make the prequels legends too. But in a way, I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah,
because that there's something that I hate it when that happens to me. You know, when they somebody you know if, like if they do a remake of something and they take what I liked and then oh yeah that didn't happen. This is the way it happened.
You know, I thought you, I, well, you said you hate when that happens to you. I thought you meant like when we reboot Star Wars Minute. And you're, you know, just cut out all the Pete parts and
right. Yeah, I'll hate when they replace me with the you know a perky young lady who's much more.
We're gonna go with a CGI Felicia Day.
There you go.
Pete is legend now.
Pete is legend.
It's true, all of it. Alex, Pete.
Someday they'll discover that, and then it'll be great. There'll be a nice hologram of us. It'll be wonderful. Well, let's. Pretty much all I had for 78. Keith, unless you had any other observations?
I'm not sure how to read Obi-Wan Kenobi's nod. You
it's
know,
very non-committal.
Yeah, it is. So it's like, okay, kid.
Do you think they purposely didn't, they kind of left a pause, like a kind of thing there because they thought the audience was going to be going like, woo, like,
or
like, oh, like reacting to that? Like, I hope not. That's so sad.
I think they were. if I can remember, you know, as we've rediscovered recently watching The Force Awakens, that there's a huge difference between kind of an opening night crowd and then, you know, the rest of time. So, like, I think I seem to remember the opening week crowds, at least, you know, during that moment being, you know, cheering for that.
Really?
It's supposed to be momentous. Yeah. And it's like, well, might not be as momentous as we had hoped, but here it is on screen at least. But yeah, since then, that's been like all those moments like that are lost to time. You know, like even the ones, you know, we've discovered going back through Empire and Jedi, kind of noticing, oh, that's the moment where they reveal their face to the screen. So we have a chance to be like, woo, it's Harrison Ford. He's back, you know. And so I think this was that kind of a thing, you know, leaving a gap in there for reaction.
We've been talking about Ewan McGregor. You know, Obi-Wan was originally supposed to be the star, and so on, and Anakin was supposed to be 12 years old. Do you think it's the kind of thing where when Ewan McGregor signed up, he thought he was the star, and then they're like, "You and baby, we got some bad news for you." Yeah. Or do you think he like was this script the one he signed up for, or was it changed out from under him?
I don't think he needed to see a script. I think they were just like, hey, do you want to be Obi-Wan Kenobi? And he was like, sure.
Okay, but it wasn't like they were saying, oh yeah, you get to fight Darth Maul and anything specific.
If it was anybody else, I would say maybe.
Right.
But the fact that I think Ewan McGregor, was, you know, maybe they took advantage of that. Maybe they knew. They're like, oh, we can cut his role down a little bit because we know he's the most excited about this. Look at that. He's over there playing with the lightsabers and we're not even rolling.
You know? Making noises when he does it.
So I think maybe they knew that they could get away with that more, but
right.
I don't really think it mattered that much to him.
Yeah.
As long as he was, you know, he was Obi-Wan Kenobi. All right. Well, on that note, Keith, thanks for joining us again.
Oh, today, for sure.
Being another part of another All-Star Week. You know, depending on how much of a glutton for punishment you are, maybe we'll ask you back for Attack of the Clones.
I would definitely come back for that.
All right. You heard it. He said it. It was on it's recording, on so it counts.
Everybody else, hopefully you can join us tomorrow. In the meantime, go to iTunes, give us a good review, give us a rating, subscribe to the show. All that stuff helps. Go to StarWarsMinute.com/Amazon and buy some stuff because we get a cut of that and it helps us produce the show. And then we'll be back tomorrow with another All-Star here on Star Wars Minute.